Welcome to the Two Writing Teachers podcast. Two Writing Teachers is a meeting place for a world of reflective writers. Here on the podcast, we're excited to talk about ways to create, lead, and sustain joyful and productive writing workshops. My name is Stacey Schubitz, and I'm here with my colleague, Melanie Meehan. Let's work together to inspire and empower students to be competent, brave, and confident writers. Welcome back to the podcast. Thank you for joining us today. I'm excited to be chatting with Melanie about paper choice. If you are a regular listener to the Two Writing Teachers podcast, then you probably heard the tip for tomorrow I shared a couple of weeks ago about paper choice as an accommodation. And today we are going to speak about how paper choice is more than just an accommodation for some students, but how it's a necessary tool that we can provide for all of our students.
I have an entire chapter in my book devoted to paper choice. Beth Moore has done a whole lot of work on paper choice and pushing our practice and thinking about it. So there is a lot to say about paper and its power with young writers, for sure.
Absolutely. So paper can be a scaffold for all kids. And one of the ways that it can scaffold is by encouraging us to write more. And sometimes we're not ready to write more. So we can provide students with paper choice that looks and feels different for every kid. We can give a few choices. But basically what I'm thinking is we're not just handing loose leaf paper that has 20 or more lines on it to kids. We are handing them paper that has room for a picture and space for 1, 2, 4, 6, 9, 10, 12 lines of writing on it. As the lines increase, the picture space decreases. This allows students to do a little thinking ahead of time about the picture. Hopefully they're doing some oral rehearsal as well.
Hopefully.
And then hopefully, right? And then they can get to the actual writing. And as time goes on, they're going to increase their writing. They're going to want to write more and have the paper with more lines because they may not need as much space for their picture. That picture is not going to be as much of a scaffold for them. They're just going to be ready to write because their writing muscles are going to get stronger.
Yeah. I want to just go back to that loose leaf paper image for a minute, because I don't know about you, but sometimes if I pick up a piece of loose leaf paper, it's completely overwhelming. You're like, oh my gosh, there's so much of this paper that I have to fill up. And it's an overwhelming feeling. So I think, you know, when you think about the lines that kids can choose and the number of lines that feels possible to them, I think there's a lot to be said to having it be a Goldilocks effect. Like, that's a little too small. That's a little too big. This one's just right. And we ask them to sort of self-assess and make decisions about themselves and what works. A paper is really one of them that they can jump into that process with and think about, what is the number of lines that feels right to me that I can fill up and feel really good about myself as a writer?
And also, I'm thinking about narrative right now. Where do I need more space in my story? And where do I need less space? So in that middle of the story, perhaps there are more lines, more sheets of paper, and the beginning and the end has less lines. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe it's a really long conclusion. But if we are giving kids choice and allowing them to perhaps staple their own booklets together, and we can talk about stapled booklets in a second, but we can allow kids to kind of pick and choose what works for them at different points in their writing. Same thing goes for if you're doing informational or opinion writing, then obviously, you know, your body paragraphs require a different type of paper maybe. But we can allow kids choice, and choice is really important. It is a very important place in the writing workshop where kids have that power.
So I love the idea of saying to them, you might have one page for the beginning and one page for the ending, but multiple pages for the middle. I think that that's a powerful visual for kids to see and hold in front of them. Mm-hmm. And it might be a place to just jump in where you can think about how you use the Google platform. So if you are somebody who either has a kid who does better with keyboarding, or you're in a place where for whatever reason you can't create as many papers as you want to, like maybe there's some kind of a budget restriction on you.
Or a copy restriction, like in one of the schools I've taught in, it was 4 copies of class sets per day. So if you had 25 kids, you got 100 sheets of paper per day.
Oof. Well, in any case, if that's the case, I have more to say about that, but I won't. You could think about how do I use a Google platform in a similar way? And one of the ways, you know, as you're envisioning the length of a beginning and the length of an end versus the length of middles, you can set up slide presentations. It could mm-hmm. be that. And you might have paper equivalents of slides, if you will, that sends a message to writers about where the space should be and where the words really go, where the majority of words go when it comes to putting them out into the world, whether it's on paper or whether it's digitally. So I would just say that.
Yeah, I think that's a great tip.
Let's talk about the stapling books, because I think we both have some thoughts about presenting stapled packets to kids and the messages that that sends and what we do about that, Stacey.
I do have thoughts on this.
Shocker.
My first thought is that I don't love it. I understand why people are stapling booklets for kids. They want to have them fill a certain number of pages. They want to make sure they're – I'm just going to use story right now as the example. They want to make sure their story has all the parts. So then someone like me comes into the classroom and is conferring with kids. Let's say it's a lab site and I have teachers watching me. And I'm like, oh, you can add another page to your writing. Like you have this great idea. And I'm teaching, you know, doing a teaching point on elaboration and the kid wants more space to write. And they only have that one last page left. And they're like, well, what do I do now? And I'm like, okay, let's get the staple remover. And it's time taken away, removing staples. And if the kids are in first grade, maybe it's just me being overprotective, but I don't love kids playing with staple removers in first grade, maybe because sometimes I have had issues getting staples out. So
I break my nails.
There you go. There you go. So what I like to suggest to teachers in this case is to do one of two things, either use paper clips, and a binder clip can certainly work as well. There's so many different sizes of binder clips. There are those little mini ones, and those are perfect for kindergarten, but using a paper clip so that way you can easily add or delete pages to the booklet. I also like those little tiny silver rings that you can put in the top corner of the page. You know, you just punch a hole in it, put the ring in, and then you can open and close it. That's a little harder for some kids in terms of fine motor. So I think a paperclip is the easiest, cheapest way to go. And it allows revision. And I think revision is important. So I am not a fan of the stapled booklet, yet I understand why people are.
I'm just like, as you're talking, Stacey, going to be real here. I do use the stapled booklet. Mm-hmm. And I can't really imagine making 50 copies of a booklet and then sitting down with a paperclip. Like I don't have that kind of time. So if you're listening to it and you're like, oh, I'm going to sit and I'm going to paperclip 50 booklets, like I get it. And if you use staples, I do too. So.
And that's fine. Look, I am the type of person who used to have kids come up during lunchtime to hang out, and they would often offer to help me. And that's a job I would farm out to a kid. I would not personally do that myself. So in the sake of transparency, yeah, you gotta put your students to work over there. But I mean, look, if they're hanging out with you and you're having lunch and like everyone's doing something afterwards, it sends a message that like we're all members of this community and this working community, and we all have to take care of it and do things together. So
100%. I think in any case, the important thing is that you can really send a message to kids through paper and through whatever packets and whatever forms you give them, that there's a structure to stories and there's a way that stories go that they can follow and they can set themselves up with. And it almost makes paper act like an organizer for kids in a really powerful way. So that's the way that I would really get my head around paper and the power of using it. Maybe another thing to think about when we're thinking about paper and how we can really leverage the power of it is to think about what we also put on paper that kids are picking up and using.
So say more about this.
Yeah. So when I think about it, one of the things that I don't love is when I have information paper and there's like a certain number of steps put out, because to me that limits the number mm-hmm. of steps a kid can put down for a process. So I don't love that for like a how-to. I don't love it for an information piece. Like here are the types of with like, you know, four boxes and lines. Mm-hmm. I think it's really, again, sending a message. I guess maybe the question that I would say to always have in your head as you're thinking about paper is, what message am I sending to students via paper? That might be the question to just have at the inside of your eyelids, like, right? Like, what message am I sending to kids through this paper?
Right. And when there is more space, it communicates the message of, I want you to fill this up. And when there's less space, it's, here you go, just do this much. I'll use my own daughter as an example. I was looking at something she wrote. I said to her, okay, you accomplished the assignment, but why did you write this short? She said, well, that's all I had to do.
Yeah.
You know how well that went over. I pushed back, of course, and I said, well, you could write a little bit more. And I'm thinking at this point, and I did look at the graphic organizer and that she was given, and look, she filled it and then she just typed it up on Google Docs. She did what was expected of her because of the message that that particular graphic organizer that was given to her communicated was, just fill this up enough and then you're finished. So there are messages with graphic organizers, like true graphic organizers. And then there are messages that we send with paper, that paper can be a graphic organizer and it can push us to do a little bit more.
Right. So that being said, one of the things that I will put on paper sometimes that I think is really helpful for students are charts that they might find in the room, or checklists that we've created together. And I'm thinking about those kids who have a hard time isolating the visual stimulus in the room and thinking, okay, I know that there's a chart and where do I look at it? Or they might get overwhelmed by the busyness of anything.
Yep.
And they might need the proximity of their visual stimulus closer to them.
Mm-hmm.
So for those kids, I might take that visual stimulus, whether it's the anchor chart or whether it's a procedural chart or whether it's a checklist, whatever it is, and I'll put it right in the corner of their paper. Kind of a powerful use of paper.
It is a powerful use of paper. And I love the closeness of that. I'm the kind of person who would not want to get out of her desk if I were in elementary school, walk around the room and find it. But I'd be more than happy to use that tool if it were right in front of me.
It's a really easy thing also to put when you're using any kind of digital writing.
Yep.
So yep. I would just say give that a try. I know, Stacey, that you have a lot of experience with the occupational therapy mm-hmm. element of paper. Do you want to say a few things about that?
Absolutely. Let's talk about the occupational therapy type of realm when it comes to paper. When I was teaching fourth grade, the occupational therapist came into my classroom and said to me, I'm going to provide this student, whatever that person's name was, with some raised line paper. And I said, well, what is raised line paper? I had never seen or heard of that before. She showed it to me and I ran my hand over it and it was bumpy. And by bumpy, I mean, basically each line just came up a little bit on the page. And I asked what the purpose of it was, and she said that it was to control where the letter placement was on the line because you didn't want to go over it and write real huge. Like, it basically forces the child to keep their pen or pencil inside the line. And it's a great piece of feedback for a child to have because it allows them to realize where their handwriting should start and end for a word. I don't see that often enough in schools, and it is really expensive paper.
I was going to say there's a cost.
There's a huge cost for it. Look, we didn't. I mean, this was in like I think my fourth or fifth year of teaching. I had never come across it in New York. We didn't have the budget for that. That's where our copies were being limited. Actually, I haven't seen this enough in other places, but it exists and it's a really great tool. So if you can obtain some Reeslime paper, that's something you want to give. And remember, that's not going to be something a child needs to use forever because they're going to eventually be able to control their handwriting and where their words go on a line, but they need some input for a little while. Another thing that I think is really helpful that I learned that year was, you know, for kids who just could not figure out like how to stay left justified in their writing.
Oh my gosh, the kids who like slant their writing like way down toward the middle.
Yes, we have that in this house too. So, you know, I use some visual markers with both kids. I'm not singling one of them out. But what that therapist had showed me was how to run a line down the left-hand margin of the paper. And there is some paper you can buy with like this. There's no need to go out and buy that. I'm sorry to the paper manufacturer who I just said, don't buy your stuff. But I mean, if you have a highlighter and a ruler and a piece of any type of paper, you can highlight down the left-hand side and teach the kids how to do it. And like,
I was going to say, you can teach kids to do this.
Yeah, you don't need to, like, you need to show them a couple times maybe.
Yeah.
And then they can do it. All of their first words on each line need to touch that highlight except for the very first word, which they're going to teach them to indent. And, you know, they can use their thumb for that starting at that highlighted line. So it's a nice visual. And for some people who are using loose leaf paper, you might think, oh, well, it already has that pink line down the side of the page. I don't need to put that there. Well, unfortunately, some kids just don't see the pink line. They're just so used to seeing the paper that that small pink line means nothing to them. Throw a highlighter on that. That's going to really help. And I've seen that work for so many kids, and it's such an easy way to do it.
Yeah, I'm the type of writer who needs the highlighter on the left side of the paper, right?
Absolutely.
We're constantly teaching kids the power of saying, I'm the type of writer who. Like, there is types of writers who enjoy different parts of paper, components of paper differently.
And likewise, if you have a student who is a squisher, you know, the kid who wants to squish the word then and not go to the next line, you can do it on the right side of the paper. Once you hit this line, you need to stop and go to the next one. And if it's developmentally appropriate, you can highlight or hyphenate the word and then take it to the next line and hug your other highlighted line. So,
yeah, love that. I think there's also like, and the type of writer, I'm the type of writer who's a squisher, gets me straight into the idea of when paper gets in the way of writers. And I think when I think about the types of writers who are squishers, I think that sometimes the size of the lines can get in the way. So we talk about the number of the lines, but we can also talk about the size of the lines. And there isn't a right or wrong answer when it comes to this one. Like, I have kids who the wider the lines are, the sloppier they write. And they are the type of writer who need to learn that they benefit from having narrower lines. They tend to just write more carefully and clearer ideas.
And there are the microscopic writers, which is, you know, more prevalent as you get older beyond elementary school. But I mean, I've seen this with sixth graders. They're writing so small and you could barely read it. And then if they need to erase something or cross it out, I mean, it's just, it's like a mess. So then they need a wider line. And then it's like, okay, well, we want you to fill this line.
Right.
So I think that it could serve both purposes. And while we're at it, what about those dotted lines? I think you have a stronger opinion on this than I do, so I'll let you go first. What do you think of the dotted line? The midline, some will call it the, oh, it's not the skyline or the worm line or the
hang line.
Yeah.
Here's the complication that I have with it, right? I think that for many writers, and this is, again, I am the type of writer who kind of a statement, if a child is the type of writer who visual stimulation is an issue, mm-hmm. then I think that when you have a dotted line going through the middle of the two lines that they're supposed to get to, can be really distracting. Mm-hmm. And if you have the type of writer also who's a perfectionist and will make sure that every single H goes exactly to that line and that becomes the focus of their being as they're trying to concoct ideas, that paper could be distracting and an issue. Again, is the paper helping or is it hindering would be the question that I would just say keep asking. For me, that kind of paper would drive my brain crazy. I would mm-hmm. be the type of writer who would need to have my letters fit the paper, and I would give up creativity and content and idea development as a result because I would be so concerned with my letter formation and my compliance to the request of those lines. So,
right. I mean, and there's a time and a place for it. If you have kids who are mixing casings, they're, you know, there's uppercase and lowercase in every word and it's a mess. Well, then, you know, take the time to teach handwriting. Another podcast, I know. Take the time to like talk about that. And maybe that's a goal, and that paper with the dotted line is helpful for that kid for a short amount of time. And then it gets taken away. I think you have to play with it.
Right. And again, the question is it helping or hindering? Mm-hmm. And if for many of the kids I see who are using that type of paper with the dotted lines in the middle, they're not paying any attention to the dotted
lines. No, they're not.
They're not. It's like, why are you bothering? So I guess the other thing I will say about a lot of the paper with the dotted line, yeah, and I do have a complex relationship with the paper with the dotted lines.
I see. Now everyone sees.
Is that a lot of the times when I experience that paper, it's rough. I am the type of writer who likes smooth paper. I had a very negative experience, and this is going to be another part, I'm sure, of this conversation, with having yellow paper for my rough drafts as a student in elementary school and white paper for my final drafts. Mm-hmm. And I remember the roughness of the yellow paper, and it's the hang line paper seems to always be rough also. And it was almost like it was like tactile. I mm-hmm. didn't like the way the paper felt. It was sort of like how I like my certain pens, right? Like it was almost rough as my hand went through it. And I just didn't ever feel the satisfaction of that beautiful paper feel. I don't know. It just could be me. But.
Look, I have not had that experience, but I do believe that that happened to you. And I think that if that's going to slow you down, then you're the type of writer who needs really smooth paper. There's like the tissue paper, and then there's paper. Like that's kind of where my mind goes. And then there's cardstock. So
there's paper. Oh, I love cardstock.
I know you love cardstock.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you want to – should we just like talk about the idea of like that cardstock and the different sizes of paper and colors of paper and decorative paper and all of that?
Yeah, let's do it. So I'm going to go in with like some decorative paper. So years ago, like we're talking like 2008-ish, I decided to do like a writing as a gift center in my classroom where, as you talked about in A Tip for Tomorrow a few weeks ago, kids were basically packaging up their writing as holiday gifts for their family members so that everyone had a gift to give to someone in their family. And then I kept the center open for the rest of the year, and I went to I can't remember what it was called, but this like recycling center in Rhode Island that like people would drop off their unwanted craft supplies. And so I would buy like really cheap decorative paper and put it there. And so like whether you have a makerspace or writing as a gift center, you could have decorative pretty paper in your writing center. And that could be a cover for a book, or it could be used for something else. It could be used as a background for a picture if kids really want to get.
You know, as you're thinking about the color of paper, and we're also like going back to the idea of lines, there is value in giving some of the kids who just can't get going as writers smaller pieces of paper. And one of the most impactful ways that I got to a kid who wasn't getting any writing done, and necessity is the mother of invention, right? Or sometimes you stumble across things. All I had with me was those little colorful lined Post-its. And she loved writing on them. And all of a sudden she was writing her story across these lined Post-its. And what was so for her, and what I realized for many other kids, is that she liked the color and she also liked the size. And she wrote just as many words on those Post-its as she mm-hmm. did on the big line, the big regular 8.5 by 11. But for whatever reason, that felt more comfortable to her.
Great.
So she could bridge the gap. And once I pointed it out to her, like I was like, oh, look, you know, you have just as many words, actually more words on this little Post-it as you did on that other big piece of paper. It made her a braver writer on a bigger piece of paper. So I do think that there's opportunity in terms of what size paper and how we think about what we put in front of kids and either overwhelm them or welcome them into the writing process. So
absolutely. Another idea, and this is a little bit more unit specific, is if you are doing any type of letter writing, be it persuasive letters or friendly letters, give kids letterhead, make it alongside each other. I mean, in many places, kids can learn how to do this themselves because they have the tools right on their device. Give every kid a piece of letterhead or a few pieces of letterhead and let them write with that. And it could have the amount of lines that they need on the letterhead. It could be printed out and they can write right on it. And it's powerful when your name and address is at the top of the page.
Right. Oh my God, my kids used to love getting stationery that was like from the desk of. Mm-hmm. So fun. I don't want to stop this podcast without talking about the power of paper as a tool for innovation.
Please.
And I think, you know, we talked a lot about giving kids different numbers of lines on paper and giving kids different sizes of paper, but I really want to just say a word in defense and like shouting out the power of a blank piece of paper. And when you're doing information pieces and when you are doing actually story pieces too, because it might be that kids want extra pictures on their pages and mm-hmm. it might be that kids want to kind of invent how big their words are going to be in different places. So if you give kids blank pieces of paper and invite them to create the paper that they need for the piece that they're creating, that invites them into the power of being an innovator when it comes to paper and creating something original that fits their needs.
Right. And if the paper is easy to see through, they can just take a ruler and make some dark line, you know, trace some dark lines from another sheet of paper that's under it. And there are their lines. And then they can set up the page exactly like they want to.
Right.
I think that's a beautiful way to do it. I think storyboarding paper is also another tool for innovation. We can hand storyboards to kids, teach them how to use storyboards, allow them to see that as a planning tool. And it might become the planning tool of choice once they become a little bit more experienced with using storyboarding paper.
And then the other thing that I would just say when it comes to innovation in paper and paper choice, and this would also be a big plug into why you bring your drafts outside of your writer's notebook, mm-hmm. is the power of paper strips. So when you give kids paper strips and invite them into taping them together and stapling them on and sort of cobbling up their writing with the revision that paper strips allow them, which is tough to do when you're in a writer's notebook, right? Like,
I don't think it's possible at all to do this well. I think it needs to be done outside of the notebook because otherwise your notebook becomes an absolute mess.
Right. So again, it gets us into the notebook and it could be like, again, another whole conversation. But all of this is envisioning drafting as a process that's outside of a writer's notebook. And those paper strips are just, they're such a powerful source of innovation and way to revise and way to get creative in terms of finding space.
Right, because you don't always want to cut up the paper. Sometimes you just need to add a sentence or two, and just having, you know, a couple of lines, you know, 2 lines to 4 lines on these, I always called them spider legs. You just write on the spider legs. And that was not my term. I got that from Carl Anderson and I thought it was great and I will use it forever. But you write on the spider leg, your little thing, you tape it on and then you fold it over. So when you go to, you know, trying to put your final draft together, whether you are rewriting it or you're typing it up, you just open up your spider legs and there are all your revisions and it,
it's playful. It's playful. It's innovative, it's fun. And it's playful and it's powerful. And I guess that's how I would just want to wrap this up is like, don't ever underestimate the power of paper in the writing workshop, because there's power all over the place when it comes to the size, the colors, the feel, everything about paper.
Thank you for listening to the Two Writing Teachers podcast. Check out the show notes for links to the items we mentioned in this episode, as well as ways to connect with us. For more about the teaching of writing, head over to the Two Writing Teachers blog at twowritingteachers.org. If you liked what you heard today, please share it with your friends and colleagues, post about it on social media, like, subscribe, and leave us ratings and reviews. Our music is by Lemon Music Studio. If you'd like to connect with us, email us at contact@twowritingteachers.org. Thanks again for listening. Let's teach, learn, and write on together.